This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Questions. Okay, assalamu alaikum.
Can you hear
me? This thing on. Yeah. Okay. So there's a number of questions, which are, questions come up again and again. They're good questions. If you're interested in the, basically the question is, how can you square supporting, let's say, rights of LGBT groups with Muslims not agreeing with their actions or lifestyles? Isn't that enjoining wrong instead of enjoining right? And if you're, I mean, this is a really good debate. So I don't pretend to, have complete domination of this debate. And if you're interested, that Yaqeen Institute article I told you about, I think it's called Islam and LGBT Rights Revisited, that has two parts, as my argument, and then after that is, Dr. Shadi al-Masri. Anyone ever know Dr. Shadi al-Masri? So he has a rebuttal of my argument. You can go and see both sides of this argument. It's very useful, I think. Okay. So, I think it's very important to understand what the debate is, right? And some of this is not, I think it's still very relevant. Maybe it's not so relevant as it was 3 or 4 years ago, but it's still very relevant. It will be relevant again if it's not immediately relevant today, which is what we're arguing. We're not arguing for other people committing sins. We are arguing that the way that rights and are understood in the United States, especially, for example, rights to marriage, rights to be able to do your will according to Sharia law, right? That these not be controlled by Western European Christian cultural baggage. So the way that marriage is understood and religion is understood in the United States is highly influenced by Western European Christianity. Not Christianity, Western European Christianity culture. And a very good example of this is the idea that polygamy is illegal. So why is polygamy illegal now? But, let's say homosexual relations, sex outside of marriage, all these other things are completely legal, but polygamy is illegal. I think it's getting less, this objection is getting less now, but this aversion to polygamy is a hallmark of Western European culture. Only a small minority, only 16% of human societies in history have said monogamy is the only way to go. This is a very minority position in humans, with the human society, human species. But it's very particular to Roman culture and then eventually Western European culture. And it's not that I as a Muslim support gay marriage. I as a Muslim support a notion of marriage that isn't defined by Western European culture, which is the same exact thing that the gay marriage advocate wants. It's not that I support that person's activity. We both want a common objective. So that's very important. And along with that idea is, yes, we should not do Amr bil Munkar. We should not do Nahyan al Ma'ruf. If someone asks us, do you think that living in a gay lifestyle is good? We should say, no, we do not think this is good. We do not think this is healthy. We do not think that we think this is a sin in the eyes of God. We don't support it. We should try and educate people about this. I mean, let's take an example of things like transgender issues. When, someone, my kid's friend, who's a 4-year-old girl, her mom said, our kid is now a boy. And has changing a name and everything like that. And this friend of ours wanted us to support this, and we said, no, we don't support this. We don't think this is right. And I'm happy to go and argue that point, right? I can make lots of good arguments why I don't think it's right to take a 4-year-old's opinion about what their gender is and then make that the rule. Okay, I can think of a lot of good reasons that's not a good idea for society or for that child in general. And we should go out and make this argument. But when it comes, for example, to transgender bathroom issues, we both want the same thing, right? When I went to boarding school, right? We showered. It was a big room with lots of different shower heads. And we went in there, and we all showered and played soap hockey, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I had a great time. If I wasn't Muslim back then, I can't take my Muslim kid and put him in that boarding school. So what do I want? I want to have a bunch of little stalls, each with a shower head, with a little like door so that person can change and not be seen by other people. And guess who else wants the exact same thing? Groups that are interested in transgender issues, transgender rights. So again, we want the same objective. And a really good, interesting hypothetical is, what about, let's say a politician in your local, in your area says, I want to pass a law that says that men can't go jogging with their shirts off. That's interesting. There are places like in Ontario, other places in the United States, some places in the United States where men cannot jog with their shirts off. These are local laws, right? This is an interesting question. Because now you're a Muslim, what are you going to say when someone asks you about that law? I don't want to be married to this answer, but my argument would be, I would support that law provided it applies to everybody. Right? So I'm not going to discriminate. It's not going to be about gay or straight or one group or another group, but that this should just be a general law that applies to everybody. I would actually be okay with it. So I think Muslims should be, when there are instances that come up where we do have a chance to advocate for what we know is ma'ruf for society, we should advocate for those things, even though those might not be the liberal things to do. And if other people say, well, why are you being conservative, or why are you trying to restrict our rights? We said, we're arguing, this isn't about restricting rights. We are arguing for something that we think is good for society. We don't think that immodesty is good for society. I don't want to go on for a long time, but someone asked about Jesus-centered interfaith activity, where you have sort of a interfaith group with Christians that's based around the person of Jesus, alayhi salam. I think that's fine, but with all these type of arrangements or collaborations, you have to be very clear that you're a partner. No one's doing you a favor by bringing you on board. And it means you have to have an awkward but very important conversation where you say, these are my expectations, these are my limits, these are the red lines for me. And just like you respect the other person's red lines, they should respect yours. So you say, for example, I don't want to have, let's say, pictures of Jesus. I don't want to have, because of course he's always white in the pictures anyway, right? So, he's always like this super Aryan guy. So, I don't want pictures. I don't want to have, let's say, a cross. But if you want to have other, let's say, the symbol is like about the name of Jesus and like it's in kind of almost calligraphic, that's something that we could work with. And if the other person says, well, that's not okay with me, then maybe you shouldn't work with them. That's just my opinion. Other people might disagree with me.
I think the question that's in here about Jewish groups wanting interfaith dialogue but make a non-discussion of Palestine a condition for collaboration. And how do we reconcile these issues about basic humanity, flexibility, and also making sure that the issues are not ignored. And I think this touches on the broader debate in this country, especially among Muslims that are being invited to a particular ecumenical deal with segments of the organized Zionist community in the United States. I make a distinction between Zionist organized community versus the Jewish community, broadly speaking. So this ecumenical deal that is being struck, we're seeing part of it with what's called the Muslim Leadership Initiative, the Shalom Hartman Institute, that takes Muslim leaders to Jerusalem to try to educate them about the centrality of Israel and Zionism to Jewish Americans. But in here, Jewish Americans, again, specifically about the organized Jewish community that is beholden to Zionism rather than the broader arena. In addition, there are many other smaller projects that are taking place. The American Jewish Congress or American Jewish Committee engaging in an ecumenical partnership that is struck with ISNA. And I think that there's been considerable pushback on this. Now, AGC has been, in my view and research, one of the primary purveyor of Islamophobia, given the stage to major Islamophobic figure. They gave the Courage Award to Ayaan Hirsi Ali. They promoted the books of Stephen Emerson, promoted the books of Daniel Pipes, and their list of figures they promote is the who and who from the Islamophobia industry. So not every hug that is given to you because you are feeling pain, you need to take the hug, because some of these hugs are actually just situating you even in a much more better position to take another hit rather than being able to forge your own path. So in discussing alliances and relations with a segment of the American Jewish community, segment of the American Jewish community, there has to be sub principles in there, meaning justice is indivisible. Yes, I want to work on Islamophobia, but I want to work on Palestine as well. And therefore, working on Islamophobia while simultaneously constantly demonizing Palestinians, constantly tarnishing their standing. The only material that comes out is actually negative relative to the Palestinians from certain segments, whether AJC, ADL, JCRC, and the rest of them, then that is very, very problematic. Some are arguing that the Jewish community or the organized Jewish community is providing for us possibly access because they're very well connected, and therefore this access might help us. Well, my sense is that there is no such thing as a free lunch in America. If somebody is giving you access, the question is at what they are gaining in return. Because in the political arena, everyone is pursuing their set of interests. So what is the interest of AJC or ADL or Shalom Hartman to give you a complete free dinner, meaning a fully paid trip to Israel, a whole year project? What is their interest? And I think you need to answer that question. If you're invited to that partnership, what is their interest? And also, what is your interest? And I think there has to be an articulation of what is the Muslim interest. Even if you want to have an engagement, let's say, I want to engage with X organization. Let's say JCRC is inviting us. What is your interest? Is it interest because you think that they're going to open the door for you? Then what door is that that is being opened? And is it a contingent door, or is it really an arrival on your part? I think Muslims need to take themselves seriously. We need to arrive, but we need to arrive on our own terms. Why is it that there's so much investment with segments of the American Jewish community, but there is no such investment with the African American community or the Latino community? When was the last time you've been invited to have a dialogue with the Latino churches? It's, if you're from a strategic perspective, just pure strategic perspective, the Latino community is an increasing community. They're close to about 50 million. They're a rising community in various states. If you're in California, if you're in New Mexico, if you're in Nevada, Arizona, if you're in Texas, right? If you're in Florida, and you're not doing any work with the Latino community, then what is it that is motivating you? Unless, again, you assume that the Jewish community is very powerful in a position, which for me is, again, is another aspect of anti-Semitic projection. They're successful, but they're humanly successful in the same way an other community. Right? So what is it that you're expecting? Essentially, you're trying to buy a short ticket to a think of empowerment, and I think you are faultly understanding this. More broadly, the same community that you are seeking relationship with has been almost constantly derailing our effort at our empowerment, and I will just end with the following. The most recent election for the Democratic chairship position, Keith Ellison was running for the position of the chair of the Democratic Party. I have my disagreement with Keith, right? But I defend him on the principle that they attacked him specifically on anti-Semitism. They tarnished his standing in the last few days of the campaign. AJC took a position against him. ADL took a position against him. JCRC took a position against him. AIPAC took a position against him in relation to his anti-Semitism, right? And that's how they derailed the highest ranking Muslims in the country that was aspiring for the highest position within the Democratic Committee or Democratic Party. And literally a week after, they were holding the gathering with ISNA. What type of a gathering that is only seeking symbolic relations but actually completely derailing real empowerment? Okay? You need to actually insist for real empowerment, not symbolic capital. In here, many of these efforts are seeking symbolic capital. Let's have a halal kosher. I'm for halal kosher. Let's have a photo. Let's read a text about, you know, Allah and Yahweh, and read the religious text, the Talmud and the Quran. That, for me, is all symbolic engagement that is not about empowerment in the American society. So you need to know where your interest, articulate your interest, and then pursue it, and then identify who's actually standing in your way and who's actually is assisting you. It seems that we're only trying to engage those who are collectively are standing against our collective self-interest in the United States. And lastly, some of these organizations are engaged, or some of their board members have been engaged in demonizations of Muslims. And the funding for the Islamophobia industry in this country and in Europe, 75% of it comes from pro-Israel sources. If you don't understand this, then you need to get it into your understanding before you actually begin the ABC of any type of engagement with segments of the Zionist American Jewish community.